Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned.
Edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
Bishop Ben is not with us again tonight. He is not feeling well, so migraines.
We're setting out a search party.
Yeah, I told him to, you know, rest and keep feeling better, and hopefully we'll see him next week. Tonight, we're going to talk about, with all the scandals going on, pastors lately, scandals in the church, how can people still trust the church? How can they still view it as a place that's safe to be in and safe to receive moral teaching from when all we see is this over and over and over again? This past week, there's been two or three, I think, pastors or religious leaders arrested for soliciting minors for inappropriate sexual contact. And, of course, in the United States, we always assume that they are guilty until, innocent until proven guilty. We're not saying that we know what they did and everything, but there's so much of that in the news media of late, and there are so many pastors that have been convicted of these types of crimes, that it does leave the question, how can we trust the church, and how can the church be a voice of morality when that's what's in the church nowadays?
Well, trust in certain things, especially right now, is at a premium. Because there's so much uncertainty revolving around too many things. Not just politics, but money, what we'll have available to us for It's like, where do I stop? And so, historically, you look to something of a spiritual nature, because most of us have that yearning for a spiritual connection, however that may look, as a place of sanctuary, as a place to go to. Our faith is Christian, and we believe in Christ, and we go into our churches and we call the main place where we go to the sanctuary, go into the sanctuary, because there's refuge. There's supposed to be refuge there. There's supposed to be safety there. There's supposed to be the ability to come as you are and receive. That's our executive producer bouncing around there. Come as you are and receive what you need. We're supposed to come to behold before the divine and be ourselves. This is what we're dealing with. This is what we're struggling with. And not have to worry about pressures from outside, pressures for us living a particular way, pressures in general. and not just things of a, revolving around sexual natures in the pastors have been accused of, but mishandling funds and just overall mistreating people in the church, all around corruption. Yeah, corruption. But the sexual allegations, of course, are what hit the news the hardest.
Right.
So, and or right. more consistently. And, you know, you have a particular group, denomination, faith, if you will, that has a huge issue with that. That's ongoing. And sometimes you don't see a lot of push to try to resolve that or try to quell that or try to answer that or try to go, okay, why are we consistently having these type of scenarios where ministers, priests, pastors, so on, are, it's the same story. It's the same pattern. Why is that happening? I don't think anybody's really answering that question to my knowledge. And I don't know everything, obviously. So a place that you're supposed to feel safety is another place that some people are either traumatized by now, or they're on guard because they went through certain things, or people that weren't even directly affected are now questioning, okay, maybe I sat under a particular pastor for 20 years, yes. 15 years,
right.
listened to their speaking and ministry. How do I know that, you know, what they had this stuff going on behind the scenes, how do I know what they were delivering was something that I need or something that's good for my spirit? So there's a lot of doubts that come up. There's a lot of, you know, I don't understand. And I think it's a important topic for pastors to address and hopefully encourage people that while we are ministers, we're also, God also pours the Spirit into earthen vessels, into clay vessels, as the scripture calls us. So
yes,
sometimes we crack, sometimes we break.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, churches where that's been prevalent. You know, we all know that in the Roman Church, the Roman Catholic Church, that's been a huge issue, whether it's embezzlement or, you know, sexual crimes, broken trust. It's been a huge issue, and it's not been properly addressed, as you pointed out. That, you know, it's one of those things that you know, they came together, the bishops of the church came together, and they tried to put together what they called the Dallas Accord, which was supposed to, you know, was supposed to address those issues and how they would proceed and how they would fix it. And then it got sent up to the Vatican under Benedict XVI, and he completely did away with it. He said, no, we're not doing this. And so a lot of people felt disillusioned and betrayed because, you know, they had been told for so long by their pastors, by their bishops, you know, we're working on it, we're trying to fix it, we're, you know, we're going to make a concerted effort to do things different. And then they saw that the very hierarchy itself refused to fix it. And so a lot of people left the church because they felt so disillusioned. And rather than go to another church, they just stopped going to church altogether.
Sure.
You know, and that is one of the sad side effects of that kind of broken trust that occurs in churches, is that when you lose somebody, sometimes you lose them forever.
Right.
And they'll never come back to church. And I'm not saying that that person will necessarily go to hell for that, the person who left the church. They may still have a very deep and loving relationship with God the Father and Jesus. And, you know, but they certainly are lacking then that fellowship in their life with fellow believers.
Right.
Because of their isolation from the church. And that saddens me to a great extent, because being in the old Catholic Church, where routinely,
you know, misidentified as Roman Catholics. And so we meet a lot of people that are hurt and broken and angry and frustrated and who lash out about it. And it's hard to get angry with them because they're doing what's natural. You know, they're expressing their emotions in a very natural and human way. But it's also hard not to get bitter towards the pastors and the bishops who caused this trajectory, caused this problem. And I will say I am not perfect in that regard. I still carry a lot of resentment towards the Roman Church because of their mismanagement of the entire situation. And knowing that there are souls that are forever damaged because of what they did. And so I think it behooves us pastors, as Christians, to make sure that we also hold those systems accountable, those pastors, those bishops, those elders, accountable for the things that they have done to perpetuate this cycle of abuse.
Yeah, and for, you know, I pastor a large, with predominantly LGBTQIA community, and you have a lot of broken trust there because when people begin to come out, maybe they were in church for a long time, they begin to come out, they were associated with a particular church, maybe they went for a while, and then they come out and express to their pastor, you know, here I am, I am who I am. And there's a broken trust there. You know, the pastors react in such a way that they get, you know, they kick the person out. They, tell them they can never come back. And right. So there's a broken trust there. That's a huge thing because it takes years. There's a traumatic moment there. All of a sudden are kicked out of a place that may have, you know, if they were raised like me, I mean, church was a part of my life. I've shared this many times, you know, I was going to church before I knew what church was. I was, right. Mama had me in her belly and I was in church. And so there was that going on. And if I were to confide in some pastors that I highly respected, and they were to do that to me, yeah, it would shatter my world. So it's hard, and I had that situation where I had somebody that I looked up to as a minister, someone that I looked up to as a mentor, and they broke trust with me. They promised to do certain things and didn't happen, and that. And I didn't want to have anything. I didn't want to pastor again. I didn't want to be involved in church again. You know, I love God. There's been many times that in that season where I didn't go to church, where I would be in my apartment and have my keyboard, play music because I'm a pianist and just worship on my own. But I didn't want to associate with the church as a whole. And we're warned in Scripture not to do that. We're warned to do not forsake assembling together. Because as Paul teaches us, we're part of a body. We have different members. And what happens when you cut off a piece of your body from the whole? Well, it may look okay for a minute, but after a while, it's going to die. And then it's going to decay, and it's going to rot away, and it's going to be a shell of what it could have been if it was attached to the whole. So we do damage when we one, you know, when a pastor does betray that trust, and pastors aren't going to be perfect. There's going to be things that we make the decisions to do right. That are going to be misinterpreted, or people will just take them the wrong way. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about the willful pastor's acting a fool, whether it's, you know, being angry towards a person and, you know, kicking them out of a church or assaulting them, and, you know, verbally, physically, sexually, so on, stealing from a church that people have poured their livelihoods into because they believed in the quote unquote vision. And it's hard to get that back. You know, we often pay for the mistakes of others when we pastor folks. And, what do we do when there's been those traumatic moments? What do we do when, you know, someone has been, you know, assaulted by a minister? And some of the stories, some of the recounts of people that, you know, it was found out that they did, you know, carry out the assault on a parishioner. You know, some of the things that the preachers would tell those parishioners are just astonishing and horrible and just mind-blowing to me. And I'm going, how could you do that to a person? And that person is sitting there hesitant to go forth with the deed, and then you're like, and then you bring God into it. It's like, oh no.
You know, I a couple of things. One is, you know, I read the story of a church not long ago. There's a lady on TikTok that talks about it quite a bit. I won't say the name of the church, but it's a very prominent evangelical church. And the pastor was caught abusing a 15-year-old girl. And his response from the pulpit was that the devil used her to attack him spiritually and weaken him, and he succumbed to temptation. That was his explanation from the pulpit. And I go, that is so abusive and wrong and gaslighting to the 10th degree, you know. It's just terrible.
Spiritual gaslighting.
Spiritual gaslighting. And the other is that I, Father David Jennings and I interviewed a guy, and the name is not coming to me right now, but back when we first did Expanding Your Faith way back in the early 2000s, and he had written a book. He had gone to prison. He had been a priest and had been a part of a parish that had, you know, 400 or 500 people in it. I mean, it was really big. And he had been embezzling money to the tune of about $500,000 by the time it was all said and done. And he got arrested. He went to jail. He wrote a book about his experience and everything. And we interviewed him, and there were two things of note that Father David and I talked about in a subsequent later podcast after interviewing him for the podcast about his book. And that was, one, he felt entitled to that money. He felt as though he was pouring so much into the church that he deserved to have that money.
Okay.
And the other was, even after all that had happened to him, there was not a single bit of remorse for what he had done.
Did he feel like the church was underpaying him or something?
Yeah, that he was not being given what he was worth. And, you know, the church was paying him about $40,000 a year, which is not bad in the early 2000s.
No.
That was about on par with most churches.
Was it a large congregation?
It was about 400 or 500 people in the
congregation. Oh, wow.
So, I mean,
wow.
Doesn't
justify it, but
he was, you know, it was a Roman Catholic parish where they paid for his car and his insurance and his gas and his food. And so that was just $40,000 basically that he had nothing he had to spend on to live. It was just like a slush fund for him. And so, you know, he was probably making closer to $100,000 by the time he added in everything that, you know, he got as part of the job. But it was just not enough for him. And
yeah,
he felt entitled to it. And there was no remorse, none whatsoever, even after having gone to prison and, you know, in the process of writing his book and reflecting on what had happened, there was no remorse. And one of the things he said was that he was glad he wasn't in ministry anymore because he would probably do it again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the sad part of it. There are some pastors out there that are so narcissistic that they are going to break that trust and they're going to do it habitually.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the type of people that do not need to be standing in a pulpit.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to, as clergy and laity, you know, work to make sure that they don't stand in that pulpit any longer than they have to.
Well, temptation's temptation, whether you're dealing with, you know, temptation to siphon off money,
right,
or whether you're unable to keep yourself from physical temptations with people that don't want it. So those things are, and we all deal with that, you know, whether we're, you know, food is a temptation for some people, you know, accumulation of stuff, you know, wanting stuff and, oh, I've got to buy this. And, you know, there's so many different things that tempt us to give into. And it's, we all struggle with something. Some people have substance issues where they are having to constantly combat that, you know, go to support groups, and it's a constant for them. And they know that they have those issues. You know, we have people in our church that are part of anonymous groups, and they consistently go because they know that they have to stay on top of that.
Right.
And I applaud, you know, I've said this many times, the people that I have the least problem with in my congregations, and I'm not saying I have a lot of problems in my current congregation, but the least people that I've had problems with, people that just show up and are a part, they're happy, are people that are a part of these anonymous groups,
right,
because they consistently work on it once, twice, three times a week, you know, sometimes going to a meeting every night for a while. And I think there's a lesson to be learned in there, where when you realize that there's something that is, you know, your weakness, that's an area you have to target. It's like going to the gym. There's certain areas that people are strong in. Some people have strong lower bodies, and so they don't have to work on those as much to build muscle. Some people, it's the reverse. They have strong upper bodies and have to work on the lower part. It's the same thing with people that are dealing with those temptations. And sometimes we need, you know, that professional help, whatever that looks like, to step in. But it's the consistency to stay on top of that, you know, whatever that weakness is, to keep it from running your life. You know, it's the principle of being in the river that's got the rapids, and it's a fast moving river. You know, are you just letting life take you wherever it goes, or are you attempting to navigate and steer and, you know, stay away from those rocks that are protruding up out of the water that, right, can capsize your boat and hurt you? You know, are we being purposeful in our living? And a lot of these ministers that have failed at that have done some serious damage. And, you know, I think it's important for us to explore, you know, how do we encourage people to still maintain trust in the divine when sometimes the messengers aren't up to par with the message they're delivering.
And I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, that trust, you're not going to restore it overnight. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time. And part of that is that they have to encounter Christians or people of faith actually living the teachings of their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because
It's what key.
Broke their trust is people not living those teachings.
Right.
That hypocrisy. And you've seen it. I've seen it. In fact, it was made into memes for the last 30 or 40 years on the internet. The fact that, you know, one of the biggest complaints that people have about the church is it's full of hypocrites.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in some regards, that's very true. You know, there are a bunch of hypocrites in the church. But there are also a lot of good people actually trying to live the gospel message or the message and teachings of their faith.
Yeah.
But the loudest voices are typically those that are hypocrites.
Well, what's the saying? A lie gets around the world.
Before the truth ever gets its pants on.
You know, I forget the, you know, how the, yeah, the lie gets around the world, two or three times before, yeah, truth ever gets out of bed. So yeah. The sensational part is always going to move faster.
That's right.
And so the people that are doing the good, mm-hmm. living the life, we have moved that into mundane territory, whereas, right. And in the scope of things, ministers that do perpetrate these type of traumatic things on people is small in the grand scheme of things, you know, to all the people that are trying to do righteous.
We just see it far more often.
Correct.
Because it's sensationalized, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, we start off the episode by talking about the fact that, you know, just in this week we've heard of, you know, two or three pastors or religious leaders who were arrested for crimes, but out of the, was it, billions of people that are considered Christianity their faith, that's really a small drop in the bucket.
Right.
But the problem is that because that's the loudest voice, that's what people see our faith as. And so it requires us, those of us who are still walking that path, to do everything in our power to live the gospel as best we can. To be an example, you know, St. Francis is paraphrased as saying, preach the gospel, use words when necessary.
Right.
You That's know, right. And what he means by that is your example in your life to the world around you should be a constant reflection of Christ.
That's right.
You shouldn't have to tell somebody you're a Christian. You shouldn't have to, like the press secretary, wear a 6-foot cross every time you go on television around your neck. Okay, it's not quite that big, but yeah, it does seem to get bigger each and every day. But you don't have to do that if you're actually living the teachings of your faith. You won't have to tell them that you're a Christian. They'll know you're a Christian by seeing what you're doing.
My grandmother, who is since passed, she went to the same church once she's got to this particular church for 50, 60 years, till she, oh, wow. she passed. And she was never a fan of quote unquote church hopping, right. which is pretty prevalent in Pentecostal charismatic circles that I was raised in. And I'm sure there's a few other churches that's, but, oh, yeah. but we do it a lot or they did it a lot, I should say, in the Pentecostal charismatic faith. It was not, you know, people get pissed off at a pastor. Sorry. People get ticked off at a pastor and they jump around to another church. And anyway, so she was somebody that absolutely disdained that practice. She said, this is the place that I feel God placed me. And she was a Sunday school teacher for forever. I mean, little kids, she loved children. What? And she, every Sunday morning, had her stuff together. I'll never forget on Saturday night, she was getting all her little things together. She used those little figurines, the little felt figurines that you put up, you know, just put up on the little board, and then you take them off. And then as she was, you know, teaching the class, the new figures would pop up. So she had all that stuff. And but I remember on Saturday nights when I would stay with her, she'd be there getting all her stuff together for those little kids. And she did that for, and she said, this is where God put me. And until I'm told to go somewhere else, I don't care what the pastor does. I don't care what the people do. This is where I'm planted, and this is where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, that's a very mature mindset of, I'm listen to what people say. I listen to what the people, you know, who God sends our way. But I don't take my eyes off the divine. Right. I don't take my eyes off of who Jesus is. And that's the ultimate, you know, that's what we have to look at. Yeah, people let us down all the time. But there are people that are there to encourage us.
That's right.
There's community. There's faith that is similar to the mine, and we can learn from each other. It's like today I participated in church cleanup, and I was able to talk to one of our people, and you know, they said, were talking to me about staying home a lot, and you know, don't have a lot of outlets, but we get the opportunity to come. He said, you know, they were saying even with cleaning and just being around other people, it energized their faith.
Right.
And so that's what the body of Christ, that's what the church is for, is to help energize and to pull people out. And unfortunately, all this other stuff just distracts and pulls away from that.
It absolutely does. And I think it's important, too, that we recognize, like we said earlier, that, you know, for some people, they've been so hurt by the breach of trust that they may never step foot in another church.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that we should shun them. We should turn our back on them. But it also means that we should be patient and understanding about their healing process, that it takes time. It's not going to be an overnight thing. And they may never get to a point where they ever want to return to church. That doesn't mean that we stop fellowshipping with them outside of church. You know, a lot of churches nowadays, if you leave the church, that's it. You're done. Nobody from that church will ever talk to you again. They won't have anything to do with you. You know, you're basically dead to them.
Left foot of fellowship, as they call it in some terms. Excommunicated in other circles.
That's right. They just throw you to the curb. That's it. You're done. And we need to be mindful of the fact that we might be that the only connection they have to the divine. And, you know, if we cut off connection with them, then what do they have? They don't have a voice that can be positive for their faith and that can help maybe inspire some healing and change, you know, within their daily lives. A lot of people ask me why I post so much on social media. And for a little while, I got a little derailed. I'm not going to lie. I've started down a very dark path myself with everything that was going on in the world around us. But this past week, my work has been on social media to try to heal rifts and be a voice of positive change in the world around me. And I had someone reach out to me to say that with every post they read, they felt a little more healed from their religious trauma. That's what we need to be doing.
That's right.
You know, that's the kind of thing that we need to be focused on, is helping people heal rather than creating a greater rift and a greater divide between them and God.
Well, how many times did Jesus speak in parables or talk to us about, you know, fields of harvest and seed and plants and trees? Sure. During that time, it's, you know, that was their industry, was agriculture and,
right,
you know, so forth. But I mean, he could have talked about stars or, right. you know, other things. But he's talking about seed, and particularly the mustard seed, and how powerful having faith, like a grain of mustard seed, could affect the world around us. We discount just the smallest seed planted in the heart of somebody and what that can do, because we're also taught that, you know, one plants, one waters, but it's God that gives the increase. So your job may be the planting, my job may be the watering, my job may be the planting, your job may be the watering, to come along to help that. And so just that small thing that we think is insignificant to us is the world to a person, is right. the thing they needed. It's the one thing they needed to read that day. It's the one moment that they needed to connect with, the thing they needed to hear. And the spirit of the divine comes in and waters that, brings their attention to it, however you want to put it, and it stirs growth in them, growth towards healing, wounds healing, because let's face it, you know, spiritually speaking, some people come to church just, I hate to use the phrase, but they're just bleeding everywhere because right. they've been so hurt by other churches, other people, and they're coming and just desperately looking for something different that'll give them healing and hope. And sure, at times in various times in history, it's harder to push through the outside influences than other times. Right. But we can never discount the power of putting that seed into the world or into someone else's life. In our eyes, it may be insignificant, but in their eyes, it may be the one thing they've been waiting for.
And certainly right now, the world needs hope. I mean, as one thing that is dwindling fast around the world, you know, not just in the United States. The United States has, for lack of a better term, sponsored a lack of hope that is kind of going worldwide. But it is going worldwide. You know, even people in other countries are finding that they're not hopeful anymore because of everything they see going on around them. There was a young African-American guy, about 12, 15 years ago, and he was accused by a lot of people around him of spreading false hope. And I will never forget, in a speech he gave, he said that in America there has never been anything false about hope. That was, well, former President Barack Obama who said that. And that has always resonated with me, the fact that there isn't any false hope. You know, if you can hope, if you can dream, you can make things a reality. And for some people that have been hurt by the church, one of the greatest things that they've lost is hope. Because, you know, for them, in a lot of respects, church may have been the only place there was that had any hope, mm-hmm. you know, amidst everything that was going on in their lives, especially members of the LGBT community, who are so constantly marginalized everywhere. You know, a church that affirms, supports, and loves you, that's a huge source of hope, you know, a huge source of hope.
Oh, yeah.
And if we start ripping that away from people, that leads to some very bad places, very dark places. And so one of the things that we have to do as Christians, as people of faith, is continue to spread a message of hope.
Always, because, you know, hope deferred makes the heart sick, we're taught. And it's an expectation that when I wake up in the morning, there'll be a chance for I hate to be kind of corny with it, but the sun to shine brighter, right. you know, to pierce through the clouds. for things to clear, for the wind to blow, to whatever, however you want to say it. Because I do believe that things can grow and can be better, because we've seen throughout history that peace can come when people so desire it, as opposed to embracing, you know, everything that's falling apart. Because if, you know, things always can come apart, but they can also become better. We can tear down things, but we can also build beautiful things. So the power to destroy and to create is all there.
Right.
And sometimes it is, you know, to quote Star Trek, sometimes it's easier to destroy than it is to create.
Right.
And so to create, we have to spend time preparing the soil of our heart, if we're planting seeds of hope inside of us. And we have to spend a little bit of time preparing ourselves.
Right.
And that's hard for us, especially right now, because we're all, you know, instant downloads, fast food, you know, the invention of the microwaves years ago caused people to want things faster and quicker, you know, cars to go faster and quicker. Everything has to be quick, you know. It's like, I don't know how people survived on dial-up all those years.
Right, sitting there waiting for your 4,800 baud modem to, you know, load the BBS. Oh, Lord, I'm dating myself now. So, anyway, and in some regards, that is a perfect metaphor for hope, because you would be sitting there waiting for something to load on the BBS, 4,800 baud, and you're sitting there hoping and praying nobody calls and kicks you off because of the call waiting.
Yeah, picks up the phone.
Then you have to start all over again.
All over. Listen to that tune.
That's right. So, and I was one of those back in the day who did the whole AOL trials and CompuServe trials just to have internet connections. I know what that's like. In honor of a friend of ours, a mutual friend of Reverend Mark and mine, named Dr. Sid Gates, I have a quote.
No, you didn't.
From William Sloan Coffin.
Oh, yes.
About hope. And he says, hope is a state of mind independent of the state of the world. If your heart's full of hope, you can be persistent when you can't be optimistic. You can keep the faith despite the evidence, knowing that only in doing in so doing has the evidence any chance of changing. While I'm not an optimist, or I'm not optimistic, I'm always very hopeful.
Yeah.
So I know why Sid loves Coffin so much.
Oh, yeah. He'll be so proud.
He'll be so proud. Yes. I'll have to let him know that we
channeled our shout out to channeled him. Our best Sid Gates that's here tonight.
That's right. Now, he could have done that from memory. I had to go look up.
Oh, yes, he could have.
So, Reverend Mark, any final thoughts, my friend?
I'm always at a place where good far outweighs the evil and the bad. And being connected with grace and truth and hope and faith has always enhanced my life. And these are moments of our past that can remain there if we'll work to do what we need to do to move away from them. Sure, the sting or the scar from it walks with us the rest of our lives. But, you know, what did we learn? And we focus in on that. How did we grow? We focus in on that. Sometimes we can look at a situation and learn what, maybe not what to do, but we can learn what not to do. You know, I will not act this particular way, how this was done towards me. I will not live that way. I'll instead live towards a life that looks a lot like Jesus, if possible. Every day, a little closer or a little more. And as Bishop said earlier, the church is filled with people that are loving, caring, full of compassion and wisdom. And God placed them there for us all. And let's focus on some of those people instead of the few that have chosen to not live as Jesus lived.
And I would say to those who have been hurt by churches, who have lost trust, lost faith in the body of Christ, that first and foremost, we're sorry.
That's right.
We're sorry that these things happen, that whatever caused you to lose hope and faith in the church, and whatever was done that broke trust, it was wrong, it should never have happened. And trust me, those of us who are trying to follow the teachings of Jesus are just as upset and frustrated as you are.
That's right.
You know, that these people are, you know, causing such damage to others. And we love and support you, and hope that you will give, take time to heal and give church another chance, another opportunity down the line.
That's right.
And that you will remain open to those people who come into your life that are living the authentic teachings of their faith. And hopefully they can help heal some of that religious trauma you've gone through by seeing people who actually are living the teachings.
That's right.
Reverend Mark and I are always available if anyone needs to reach out for support, spiritual guidance. You can reach Reverend Mark by going to mccoor.com. That's mccoor.com. And myself, reaching out to OurSt.Francis.org. That's O-U-R, stfrancis.org. And either of us would be happy to help you on your spiritual journey back towards a place of hope and faith. Well, folks, that wraps us up for this week. We will be back next week for our next exciting adventure. And when we once again attempt to expand your faith, I want to thank Reverend Mark for being here tonight. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for hosting.
Anytime. And we're praying for Bishop Ben tonight. Hopefully see him again next
week. That's right.
So until then, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.